Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, book clubs aren't just for women, and drinking beer is our personal legend.
I'm Nate.
I'm Mike.
And we're the Drunk Guys.
This week we are reading Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist, and drinking a shit ton of beers by The Alchemist.
Right. Exactly. We have to start with one of these.
Well,
pick one.
So let me just give you a little backstory. If you're a beer nerd, you definitely know who The Alchemist, or what The Alchemist Brewery or Brewing Company, whatever the fuck they're called, is. The Alchemist is a brewery in northern Vermont, in like Stowe, Vermont, is where I purchased all of these a couple of weeks ago. They make what is considered one of the greatest beers in the world. Hmm. Now, it's one of these five, and I won't tell you which one it is, Nate.
Nate does not know.
This is not an act.
I've heard the story, but I don't know which one is the great beer.
So, I'll tell you what. We have enough glasses that we could have a sample of each, and several of them say drink from the can, but the glasses will work fine because they have a tapered enough thing that we'll actually be able to smell and taste everything.
Okay.
We have five different beers. You wanna pick one from our sample here? You tell me what
me?
You want. Yeah, you pick,
I don't know,
man.
Anything of these. Okay. Okay.
Let's pick one to five.
This one, Skadoosh.
Skadoosh.
Okay, isn't that...
That's like, you think of like Kung Fu Panda right now?
Yeah, that is what I was thinking, yeah.
So Skadoosh, further complicate matters, all five of the beers we're going to drink are IPAs. So Skadoosh is listed as an American IPA at 7% alcohol.
Hmm.
It is bitter as fuck. Skadoosh is the one beer of the five that is not the same every time you drink it.
Hmm.
I think they kind of change the hops and stuff in it. If you look on YouTube and you look on Beer Advocate, there are different Skadooshes, you know, every kind of, like, I don't know if it's quite quarterly or how regularly they do it, but they make different beers that they change the recipe a little. So this is Skadoosh that I purchased in October of 2017. I have no idea what the fuck is in it besides, you know, beer.
Contains beer. This is a very hoppy, very bitter IPA.
Oh yeah, it's oppressively hoppy. I enjoy it. It's nice. It's a nice beer. Might be a clue. This is not the one that's considered the best beer in the world if it changes every couple months.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's very cool.
I've been developing my palate, especially for IPAs. I've been drinking a lot of them. I still don't think I'll be able to pick what is the best because I don't have an opinion about what is the best.
Well,
I just like IPAs. So we'll see.
Well,
anyway, that's number one. There are four more.
We'll talk more about when I purchased these beers and the ridiculousness that ensued therein. Today we are talking about The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, which is a fucking ridiculously successful book that I see probably on a bi-weekly basis, a person reading this on the train.
So I looked up, you know, how successful this book was, and this is like something like number 15 of the most purchased books of all time, with 65 million copies.
Jesus Christ.
65 million. I mean, I don't know all the economics of the book publishing industry, but even if you get $1 for every book published, you know, sold for $10-$12 per copy, and the author makes $1, that's fucking $65 million.
Now, this dude is rich as shit.
Yeah.
He's written a ton of books. This is by far his most famous.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know he's written more than this one.
This book's from about 30 years ago. I think it's from 1988. I think it first came out. It was, of course, originally written in Brazilian Portuguese, I think, because he's from Brazil. That would make sense. He's from Rio de Janeiro, I believe. We have read it in translation,
mm-hmm.
because the only thing Brazilian that I know is porn, and I don't really know how to read it. Nate's stifling his laughter. He thought it was funnier.
That's part of his 10,000 hours.
It's a long time ago. The Alchemist was not part of it, and I'm glad it wasn't. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
So this book, wildly successful. Why? We'll get there. We'll get to that. In a nutshell, because you know what? Honestly, the plot doesn't matter much. But if you could sum it up very briefly, what would you say it's about?
Okay, so the main character is a shepherd.
In Spain.
He lives in Spain, and he gets this vision that he wants to do something else with his life, which he wants to. He has a dream where he wants to visit the pyramids. Now, we know where the pyramids are because we live in the 21st century, but apparently he doesn't. He meets this king who has weird shit going on. He meets this king who tells him, oh, you have to follow your dreams, and here are the two stones that will help make your decisions for you, but you just have to discover the universal language. Anyway, a bunch of random shit like that.
And follow your personal legend.
And yeah, that is a really important piece of this. Follow your personal legend. The universe conspires to help you achieve your personal legend. That's the message of the book, by the way. We could, like, oh, we are 6 minutes into recording. We could hit stop right now.
So next
week.
You would
know pretty much everything you need to know.
Tweet us.
About this book, but we'll tell you more anyway. Because we have 4 more beers that we have to.
Oh, my God. We could just drink the 4 beers, and you will learn as much about this book / yourself / the world. If you just listen to us drink the beers and every once in a while go like, that's a good beer. If you just heard that, you're like, you know as much as you need to know.
There you go. It's wisdom right there.
If you can't tell, we're not huge fans. But let's, you know what? Let's explain why. You achieve your personal legend. Now, and it's in caps. Like, proper noun. Personal, proper noun, legend.
Not in the audio version.
Oh, that's right. They don't yell it. It's not all in caps. Some of us...
It's really in caps?
No, like, just like the P and the L.
Okay.
They don't put it all in caps.
Okay,
there.
Okay. I misunderstood, yeah.
It's not in leet. all the E's are threes. No, it's a capitalized, it's like a proper noun, like George Washington, personal legend. You know what? I bet you can find a person named personal legend, and I bet they're an asshole. So, your personal legend is the thing that you individually, within the greater cosmos, are sort of destined to accomplish.
Destiny? They never use the word destiny. Destiny is a really important concept in this book.
We'll get to that, because it's fucking not, yet it is, yet it's bullshit. But anyway. Santiago's a shepherd. He's a poor Spanish shepherd boy, and all he wants to do is go bang this merchant's daughter. Respectable goals.
Reasonable.
Totally fine. He's tired of banging his sheep, so he wants to go bang the shepherd's daughter.
Not in the book.
The merchant's... I read between the lines. Okay? So he's looking to go bang the merchant's daughter. Good for him. You do you. And then he has the vision, and then he's visited by this, like...
Wait. You do you?
Well, no, you definitely... Yeah. Ooh, nice. Sheepfucker puns. We're going to ram him in if we have to. So he goes and he gets this vision. Oh, this is not the life for me.
9 minutes.
And then he is visited by the fucking weirdest character, perhaps, in literary history. The king of... Now, in the book it says Salem, but I'm imagining it's like Salem. I don't know how they pronounce
it. In the audio version, it's Salem.
It's Salem? Like,
it's like Salem, Massachusetts.
So he's the king of the people that hung the witches. Okay, fine.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So the king of Salem is hanging out in Andalusia.
By the way, Jeremy Irons does the audio version.
Oh, man. That's what you do with an Oscar 30 years later, huh?
Yep.
Oh, Scar. How the mighty have fallen. So
listen, when I was a young warthog...
Oh, boy. Oh, I don't want to stay downwind. But the king of Salem just like kind of appears out of nowhere. And he's like, oh, Santiago, oh, I know so much fucking shit about you. Listen to me and I will give you some sound advice about following your personal legend. And then Santiago's like, ooh, what does that mean? And then he fucking gets a whole bunch of advice. And it's like, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and a whole bunch of other shit that you could fit on a bumper sticker. And then we opened another beer.
Yeah, definitely we have to do that right now.
I'm going to tell you which one comes next. It's going to be this one.
Okay, sure.
This is a beer called Alina, also by The Alchemist. All 5 beers today are by The Alchemist. If they don't at least fucking
retweet
us.
The Alchemist Brewery.
Well, it's just called The Alchemist. I mean, look, The Alchemist, Stowe, Vermont.
That's it. I can see it. Yeah.
Alchemist, if you don't retweet this, I'll be very upset when I drink the rest of these beers.
And I drink the other 75 of these beers.
I think it might be more than that still. So I went up to the Alchemist Brewery, or whatever the fuck it is, in Stowe, Vermont. We went on kind of like a family trip, and the person going with us said, oh, we have to stop at this place. And I had never heard of it before, because this shit does not get distributed in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, beer? You had me at beer. You don't need to tell me it's exclusive. You just say, oh, we want to stop at a brewery? And I'd say, yes. If it was like, want to stop at Adolf's Brewery of Jew Hating? I'd be like... I don't know if I'm going to like it, but I'll check it out.
But you said beer.
Yeah, the sentence. Beer was in there. You know, not everyone's perfect. If you want to stop at the, whatever you say, if brewery was in there, unless it was like Turd Brewery, I'd be like, check it out. Maybe it's a stout. Like, but you want to go to this Alchemist? Yes, I do. What is that? They make one of the best beer. The person I knew said they make the best beer I've ever had in my life. Well, I need to know what that's about. Because at this point in my life, after having had well over 1,000 different beers, I can't tell you the best single beer I've had in my life. So if someone could say that, I need to investigate. So we went, and it's a brewery where you have to get there early in the morning before they sell out. And they limit what you could purchase. I said, well, that's fucking ridiculous. It's a brewery. Like, don't they just want... Why are they going to limit me? I'll buy whatever I want. We get there, we're the first people online, and we're like, dude, you're an asshole.
What time was it?
10 a.m. on a Saturday morning. We drove up to Vermont the Friday night. We left at like 7 p.m. We get in Vermont at like 3 a.m. Crash, wake up, and go, we got to go to the brewery. Get up, everyone get up. It's brewery time. We go to the brewery. We're the first people there. We actually get chewed out by the brewery guys in the parking lot that are getting there too early. Like, no, you can't be here till 10. We got there at 9:50. And like, all right, next time you're here, you got to wait till 10. Like, all right, yeah, totally. Next time I'm here. I live 6 hours away. You got it. And then after like 5 minutes, we're like, all right, clearly we did not need to be here this early. But then all of a sudden it's 10:15. There's a line 40 people deep with license plates from Vermont, New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Maine. Like, people have traveled to buy beer. Now my interest has peaked. And they say, here's the limits for today. Here's what you could purchase today. You could buy this many 4-packs of this beer, of this beer, of this beer. So I'm there with my wife. I'm there with, it was our family trip. So my wife's parents are there. My wife's sister is there. And her boyfriend, he's the guy that's like the guy in the know. And then we basically divide the parents. Each couple, you know, me and my wife get one parent. My sister-in-law and her boyfriend get another parent. And we said, we're going to buy the limit for those people.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really consider what the math of that was, but... A few minutes later, I had a $600 bill and 181 pint cans of beer.
Wow.
And they go, oh, by the way, our beer... Oh, they didn't say by the way. They sold it before, but I wasn't really listening. Our beer is unpasteurized and unfiltered, so it has to stay refrigerated. 180? I have to refrigerate this shit? Fuck! So we get back to our place. We figure out a solution. It's all good. The beer has been safe and has never gotten hot. What do you think of Alina?
I mean, they're both good. I mean, they're both IPAs. You can definitely tell. They're both strong IPAs.
Well, I think they are...
I need a slice of ginger in between to cleanse the palate.
Alina is closer to 8% alcohol than the Skadoosh. Alina's 7.7. Skadoosh is just an even 7.
Yeah, I can totally taste the difference between 8 and 7.7.
Well, we're getting to the point, though, where once you hit 8% or above, you can start calling yourself an Imperial.
Okay, all right.
So they're riding the line.
We learned something about that last week.
We did. And we regretted something about it the day after last week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the Alina has a very earthy hop taste. This is not the right adjective. This is not the right thing. But the thing that comes to mind is like almost like an onion garlic kind of flavor. And not in a negative way. I'm not trying to say that negatively. There is something extremely... To me, it's like... That's what I think. Onion garlic. I don't know. What do you think? When you smell and taste this, Alina, what do you think?
I mean, it just tastes like a strong IPA to me.
Oh,
I might be too many beers deep to really be that sensitive to the difference. That might be the issue, but I mean, it's good. Definitely good.
I like it a lot. Well, I'll tell you which ones are the great, quote unquote, great ones later.
So wait, which one is your personal legend?
My personal legend is to drink all 180 cans before they expire. And I have been working around the clock. Or as the penis avoiders say, around the cock. But I have been working really hard to drink them. When I got home, we filled up every... So I have a beer fridge, I have a keg fridge, and then we have like a regular fridge, what you would call a fridge.
You or, mere mortals.
Or refrigerator, if you live in 1956, that we put food in and shit. The beer fridge is cramp-packed. The keg fridge, fortunately, I mean, you know, I didn't have any keg. I only had one keg. I was able to stack up cans in there. And the regular fridge had 2 shelves of beer. So my personal legend, I suppose, is to just drink this before it spoils. Rest well, faithful listener. We're going to make it work.
I'll help.
Yeah, Nate's going to make a dent.
Very small one, but I will try and make a dent.
The greatest journey begins with one step.
I don't think this is the step they envisioned.
Yeah, Confucius was thinking of something else. Let's go back to this this book that we intend to judiciously review. Santiago meets this king. I'm the king of Salem, and he's just some guy wearing, you know, a brass breastplate with jewels in it. And he's like, "You must follow your personal legend.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the stones. And this is not him asking Santiago to hold his balls. He gives him two very distinct different stones to help you find your personal legend. Which personal legend is what? What is that?
Okay, well, give me a second to consider that fucking question. So this is over and over in the book, you know. The universe conspires to help you achieve your personal legend. That's a fucking... That term is like, I guess, your destiny? I guess that's the word for it. Your destiny or your, like... To the thing that's going to make you great. That's going to make you amazing. That's going to make you... What? That's going to make you important. That's going to make you... Thesaurus. It's all of those things. But the term personal legend... As if every single person in the world could have a legend about them? No. Legends are unique. Legends are like one in a million. Legends are not personal. They're like fucking universal. Legends are, you know, is the most amazing thing I've ever heard. I mean, they're unique, but it's not like every single person can have one.
Right.
Because if every person would have... Legends are special. If everyone has a legend, it's not special anymore.
Though that comes out in the book. Not everybody follows their personal legend. Not everybody.
Yeah, but the implication is because they're dumb. Because
they're
stupid.
Or they're unwilling.
Or they're just... Or because they don't believe in... Blah, 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 blah.
And they don't believe in personal legends.
Yeah, exactly. Because they don't believe, that's why they don't actually achieve their personal legend. Although it tries to say that everyone could do it if they really wanted. But a legend is special. If everybody had a legend, it's not special anymore. That's the definition special.
But it's a personal legend. It's for you.
It's for you yourself.
So, for example...
If I wanted to go to Egypt and realize I didn't need to go to Egypt at all, sure, I could do that. That's
spoiler.
A legend.
I've realized my personal legend. I hit my 10,000 hours. I got to fucking know. All right.
And you bought 180 beers.
I'm on personal legend 2 or maybe 3 at this point. So you go and you follow this thing, and your personal legend speaks to you, sort of, through your heart and the universe and all this fucking other new age bullshit that you have to listen to. And Santiago, the poor shepherd boy, learns how to listen to it, starting with the king.
Who was really actually very happy just being a shepherd.
Yeah.
Except he wanted to bone that one girl.
He had to figure it out, though.
He was happy being a shepherd. He liked being a shepherd.
I don't blame him. I mean, he had a pretty sweet life. He wandered around. He'd read a book. And when he finished reading the book, he'd go trade it in for a new book. He'd fuck a sheep. And then he'd sleep under the stars. It sounds like a pretty good life. Now, the book also kind of takes place semi-recently. Right?
Well, here's the thing.
It's like 100 years ago.
Dating it historically is actually... I was thinking about this. You can sort of date it historically because they reference... You know, some dude had a revolver.
That's the
which
thing.
Makes it sound like it's the late 1800s, early 1900s. And the fact that, you know, because it takes place mostly in the Middle East and, you know, around, you know, in North Africa, sounds like the late 1800s, early 1900s. But at the same time, it's kind of a fairy tale. In a way, it almost, you can't put it in a specific time. It's possible because it's just fucking weird. It could happen in a weird-ass universe where time doesn't matter.
Well, fuck
you know
that
what else
shit.
Doesn't matter? Having more beer, because I think we have more beers to do, so we should.
We do. All right, here we're gonna have next. This one, this is the double IPA of the one of the doubles. This is
the other ones were strong already, so
this is only 9%. It's just Crusher, an American double IPA at 9% alcohol. This is also the Alchemist. Please sponsor. There's like a little thing on the back here where basically the brewer, owner, whatever the hell he is, says that, you know, hop heads used to come in and say, oh, we want more hops. We want to hop your beer. They said, great, but I gave more hops, but I also wanted to balance it out. So you have this big 9% alcohol IPA, which we're pouring into glasses so you can see there's some debris in there. And that is not because I teabagged it. That's because it's unfiltered. So there's a little bit of yeast sediment and whatever. So far, of the 3 of the 5 beers we've opened, none of them have said drink from the can, though that is a thing that is not unique, but certainly broadcast with the Alchemist beer. What do you think about this one?
I'm tasting them side by side, and I definitely see why this one is a double IPA. I can definitely taste why this one is a double IPA, because it is a little bit stronger. I mean, I've had a whole bunch of beers today already, but... This one is definitely has an even stronger IPA flavor.
Yeah, it's just bigger in just about every respect. I mean, especially compared to the Alina.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I gotta say, of the three, I mean, you know what? I don't have to say. I don't want to persuade anybody, or least of all you, but I have a clear preference of the first two, and comparing it with this third one, you could see how it's, you know, you could see how they've taken something and they've amplified it to get to the mm-hmm. double level.
Yeah.
You know? So if you had to pick the three right now, what are your thoughts? So how do you sort them out?
I actually couldn't answer that question because they just all taste like IPAs. I mean, the question is, what situation, what context am I in? Am I sitting in a bar and I'm going to have a bunch of them? I couldn't have too many double IPAs because I would die. But, you know, one of the lighter ones, I could sit and sip that all evening.
You could sit and sip the double, too. If you had self-control, you'd drunk.
Well, apparently I don't.
I also don't. If I had to rank them right now, Skadoosh is my least favorite of the three.
Now, you've had a bunch of each of these beers.
I have, it's true.
I'm trying them for the very first time.
That's true. But of the three we just had, Skadoosh leaves the least impact on me.
Okay.
That's my take.
All right.
What leaves the strongest impact on you?
Oh, the one we just opened.
For sure. Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I could see that
which
one.
Which is the one we just opened?
Crusher.
Crusher
and Alina, they strike me, they're similar. There's a very, I mean,
mm-hmm.
to me, the hop flavor is similar. One's just more potent than the other. And that makes the Skadoosh kind of just push back, you know?
Yeah.
We'll get to those other two, don't worry. We have two other ones.
Two more.
If you're a beer nerd, you will definitely recognize some, perhaps, of these names so far. So I don't know where we were talking about in the plot.
So, all right. So Santiago, he has a personal legend, which he hasn't realized yet. And his dream is he needs to visit the pyramids. Because he has this dream that says, if somewhere next to the pyramids or near the pyramids, I'm going to find my treasure. Like, he has this dream multiple times. There's a treasure next to the pyramid. So that's his goal. He wants to find the pyramids. And he lives in Spain. He lives in Spain. He, you know, apparently doesn't realize you could just, if this is actually the late 1800s, early 1900s, you could take a boat that would take 3 days. He could be at the pyramids, you know, at the end of the week.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that. Apparently that's not a thing in this book.
Looks like he's bull deep in sheep.
Yeah. So instead, he takes a boat just across the Mediterranean to you know, North Africa. Or... And then spends 6 months dealing in...
Crystal.
Crystal, yeah. Because that's totally worth it.
That's his
personal
semi-personal legend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he starts to, in the book, Santiago starts to listen to himself or his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets these impulses or these suggestions. And he goes, oh, my heart is telling me to do this. And over time, he begins to associate that with the universe. The universe is telling me to do this. As if, you know, all of the universe is conspiring to help him. And he ends up working in a fucking crystal shop of some guy who... They don't even quite... They don't speak the same language that well. And they speak the same language okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Santiago does not speak Arabic. The other guy speaks kind of Spanish. And he hires... And Santiago gets ripped off. He loses all his money. Sells his sheep, loses his money. Works in the crystal shop. And does that for 6 months.
So this is kind of an allegory about how the fact that the crystal dealer... Crystal vendor, whatever you call him, has done the same fucking thing for 30 years. He has dreams about doing something else with his life, but decided, this is what I know, I'm going to keep doing it. And never did the thing where I'm going to just pursue my dreams. Pursue his personal legend. So this is where Santiago learns something, but also learns that, you know, if I want to pursue my personal legend, I need to do it now. I need to just decide at any time I can go do my personal legend. There's no reason to wait. There's no reason to wait till I feel less successful. There's no reason to wait till I feel like I'm on top of everything. I should just do it now.
Well, because he learns that he tries to persuade the other guy to follow his personal legend, and the crystal merchant doesn't want to. He's like, no, mm-hmm. I can't do that.
This is what I know. This is what I'm good at.
I'd rather dream about following my...
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather... Because the crystal merchant's personal legend or whatever is to go make the pilgrimage to Mecca. So he's a bad Muslim. But that's what he wants to do. But mm-hmm. he won't do it for whatever reason. He'd rather just think about doing it. And that propels him to continue doing what he has to do in his life. After a while, Santiago has made enough money. He's made some changes to the crystal merchant's business to make them all more money. And he sallies forth towards
Egypt.
Across
North Africa towards Egypt. And then nothing happens.
He joins a caravan.
And then he ends up somewhere where the tribes are at war. So his next obstacle is the fact that he can't go further because there are people at war with each other. And he's at this oasis, and there's this weird British guy, and he's trying to learn, like, what is... I mean, okay, I'm forgetting a bunch of things that happened.
He meets a British guy. Let's all rewind.
Yeah.
He goes to find a way to get to Egypt. He's in now Northwest Africa. At like, you know, near the Straits of Gibraltar or something like that. He finds a caravan that's going to go east, and he wants to join it. And he finds there's a British guy, an Englishman, a white guy, who is an aspiring alchemist, not the one from the title. And this alchemist has been spending years tracking down these rare texts and studying them and interpreting them to become an alchemist. And Santiago speaks to this guy. They kind of strike up, I wouldn't say friendship, but understanding and acquaintanceship. And they travel together on the caravan, which is all going towards Egypt. And it's hazardous and scary, and people are dying from whatever reasons. The other guy, his personal legend is not really to become an alchemist, right? He wants to become an alchemist because he's greedy. Mm-hmm. He wants to be able to turn lead into gold and all that kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
But that's not how the personal legend really works. Because your personal legend isn't about fulfilling your whims and wants. It's about what the universe wants for you. Which is fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. And this English guy, he's in it for the wrong reasons, essentially. You know, he's looking for...
just the greed.
Yeah. And Santiago tries to learn from this guy, and this guy doesn't learn it can't teach him anything because he doesn't have anything to teach. And Santiago tries to teach the other guy about the universal language and about listening to the camels and the fucking winds and whatever. And the other guy doesn't hear anything. He misunderstands the personal legend. He wants the prize. That's not what it is about, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then that character disappears from the story.
Yep.
Just fucking he's gone when they get to the oasis. Oh, that hurt my fucking hand. Oh, god damn it. I'm so tired of opening these beers. But I'm not tired of drinking them.
So many beers.
We still have two to go. Okay,
right, so which is this one?
This is, it's called Focal Banger. Which I don't really understand what that means.
Focal Banger?
Focal Banger. This is another IPA.
That is what it says on the can.
It says India Pale Ale, 7%. That is, I've learned, the shape of Vermont.
There is Vermont on what the rest of the can is. I don't know.
Just some dude huffing a bunch of hops and beer. I can somewhat empathize. This is a very different beer than the other three, I think.
Well, let me taste them again. Wait, very different? I mean, still a strong IPA. So very different in terms of strong IPA versus another strong IPA?
Well, maybe I should rephrase. Very different in terms of balance and in terms of overall quality for me, personally at least.
Tasting. Okay, a little less strong. That was the second one, and now the first one. I'm trying to go in reverse order.
Well, what do you think?
So, okay, this one is stronger, more bitter. Maybe just because we just opened it, that might have an impact. But no, I mean they're all good.
I agree. I've had a few of these by now, and I've tried them all. I definitely have my own preferences for which one I like better and which one I like for different circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that at the end of the day, they're all great beers. Focal Banger, different in some way to me. I don't know.
Is this the one you like the most?
I will say that after we've had all five, I'll tell you which one I like the most.
Let's have another one, okay.
And we have one more to go. I think that this one has more of a lasting bitterness. When I take a sip of this, a minute later, my mouth still feels coated in hop cum. You know, like I feel like I took a hop money shot. It's intense. And in a way that's not, it doesn't, I don't really notice it until after I have finished the beer in the cup or the sip or whatever. And it kind of, you know, there's a lasting thing. There's an imprint. There's a more potent hop character from this for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me.
I can taste that.
You know, the other ones you taste, they're all great.
I mean, more potent, yes. But the other ones are potent too, so.
Oh, yeah.
In a way, it's just like, is it 10% more potent? I mean, not that I could ever put a number on it, but, you know, is it a little bit more potent? Yeah, for sure. I can taste the difference.
Quantifying it.
We're really like how many angels can fit on the head of a pin territory between all these different IPAs. It's like that narrow a difference.
Well, it was just as important for the early fathers of the church as it is for beer fans to know exactly how many.
Right, yeah. No, wars have been fought over that question.
It's all the juice.
So, all right. So here's the thing about The Alchemist. And we haven't really addressed this issue so far, but... So here's the thing about The Alchemist. The fucking point of the book. The point of the book is that it's called a fable about following your dreams, and the thing that says in the book multiple times is that the universe conspires to help you achieve your personal legend. And that's fucking bullshit. So here's the thing. It's obviously this message that if you just know what you want and you like have a goal and you work towards it. Okay, one way you could say it is if you have a goal and you work towards it, then, you know, good things will probably happen to you. And that might be true, but at the same time, the message of the book is that there's some big, in the universe, some, like, cosmic thing that's watching you and making what you want actually happen in the world.
I believe that's called God.
Right, well, I'm definitely trying to avoid using that word, but that is what it says multiple Jesus. Times. Well, in the book, it's the alchemist, who apparently, like, understands all these things, and then at the end tells a whole story about Jesus, and that makes it connect, apparently, but... That's a different issue. So, that's the thing. This book, you know, the main message of the book is that if you just pursue your goal, the universe will help you pursue that. Will help you achieve that. Will help you achieve your, what the book calls, your personal legend.
This is like reading The Secret.
The Secret by, who's the author of The Secret again?
Cocksucker McGee.
Here's the thing. So, The Alchemist is the fiction version. Okay, no, they're both fiction. But anyway, The Secret tries to say it's real, where The Alchemist portrays it as a fictional novel. It's the same idea.
The Alchemist is the novelization of The Secret.
It is, except The Secret came second, so, you know.
The Secret is the bullshitization of The Alchemist.
It is. And, you know, I want to say I didn't know I had a personal philosophy till I read this book and completely fucking disagreed with what it said in the book. It all. One thing that definitely made an impact was the fact that I was reading The Alchemist for the first time at the same time that I was reading Night for the first time. That, and if you don't know the book Night by Elie Wiesel, how do you pronounce his name? I don't even know.
I've heard so Eli, I've heard Elie.
Eli Wiesel. It's his personal account of surviving the Holocaust. And just saying that, you know, if you just believe... The universe will help you achieve your personal legend, and then the millions of people who died in the Holocaust or in the wars of the 20th century or of the wars before the 20th century, that the fact that they died, that's their personal legend? It's like, isn't the implication that if the reason why all those people died is because they didn't believe? Isn't that the implication of this book? Now, the book it says it's a fable. It's on the fucking cover. Obviously, it's not trying to be real life, but I was reading them both at the same time. Reading about the complete dehumanization of people in the Holocaust, and then so many people dying. Reading the other book at the same time, oh, well, if you just believe, great things will happen to you. They just are just... They can't be both be true. But one actually happened. The other one is just a stupid fucking book.
Or to phrase it another way, one actually happened, the other is The Alchemist.
Yeah.
But I, you know, not to defend the book, but one might say, a piece of shit might say, some people didn't follow their personal legend. Because if you read The Alchemist, the personal legend thing is kind of inscrutable. You know, stuff happens, and only if you listen very carefully with your heart and your bunghole, you will know, oh, my personal legend is calling me to do this. And instructing me to do that, and the average person doesn't listen carefully enough, and they therefore miss it. Now, if you were to actually make that argument about the Holocaust, you're a fucking piece of garbage.
Clearly bad. People have bad luck.
Sure.
People have bad luck. Even if you have a goal, you know what you want, you work towards it, you're going to have setbacks, which, you know, Santiago doesn't really have. But you're going to, except for that one part at the end. But you don't really have, like, setbacks. You're going to have setbacks. Bad things can still totally happen to you. And that's real life. Not that the universe is conspiring to help you achieve your personal legend. No. That's what struck me the most from this book.
Well, that's the thing. The universe doesn't give a rat's ass about you, right? If you understand anything about the size of the universe, you understand that the universe does not even give a fuck you exist.
I completely agree.
So then, what does he mean by universe? It's a synonym for God.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the book, it's the Christian God, which that's a heady idea. Let's get to the last beer. It's called Heady Topper.
Oh, well, there we go.
Oh, God. You have a cup? Oh, yeah, yep, there it is.
I love that one.
To tie us into last week, or how many weeks ago was that now? 2 weeks? 3 weeks? A while ago. That's a Hebrew glass.
Okay, there we go. This is a Schmaltz glass.
And to tie into what I deal with every day, I'm drinking out of a Delirium Tremens glass. Prost.
So what's different about this beer than the other four?
I'm going to ask you. I don't know.
You're going to ask me?
Yeah.
Unique. It tastes like an IPA. A little bit less intense than the previous one, but I mean, it still tastes like an IPA. Still the same color. Still has balls.
Yeah, I'm looking at, I have actually all five of my cups near each other. They're the same color.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're all within a range of from 7 to 9%, you know, alcohol.
They're all very similar.
They're very similar in strength. They're IPAs. They are going to have similar colors. Before I tell you anything else, what do you think? These beers. If your personal legend were to rank these five beers, listen to your heart. Which one do you think is the best?
Well, the universal IPA language would tell me that they're all about... I'm sorry. They really are... all about the same. If you gave me like a couple weeks, and I'd have like four of these, four of those, and just like a little more time, maybe I'd have a more discerning palate, but they're so close.
So I felt kind of similarly when I first tried them.
Mm-hmm.
And we did an experiment. We just said, close your eyes and sip this cup, which one you like better kind of mm-hmm. test. And at the end of it, everybody tried it. It was me, my wife's sister, her boyfriend. We tried all five. And we actually all settled on, you know, as blindly as we could,
mm-hmm.
which one we thought was the best. We all agreed, which is interesting. It was our personal legend to determine which was the best beer. And strangely enough, we agreed with the internet on which was the best beer.
Okay.
So I'll tell you, the one we just had, Heady Topper, is ranked the number
the one
three
we just had.
IPA in the world.
Really?
And a couple years ago was the number one beer full stop in the world.
According to who?
Beer Advocate.
Beer Advocate, okay.
Now,
this is the one.
This is like number three, and it has close to 15,000 reviews. So that's statistically that's, relevant.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
The black can, the one we had before, Focal Banger, was number four last I checked. Okay. The other ones aren't even close. Now,
they all taste pretty close to me.
I think Heady Topper is really good. I think there's an element for this kind of a beer of exclusivity, of, you know, just rarity. Because if I wanted a double IPA that I can get any time... that I'm going to like, there are other beers I might go for, or even a regular IPA. For example, I can get Dogfish Head 90 Minute any day of the week. That's a great beer. I love Dogfish Head 90. I have to drive 6 hours to fucking Vermont and line up in the morning to get more of this. That, I can't escape that in my evaluation, you know? That's a pain in the fucking gonads. I don't need to fucking deal with that bullshit.
So, the but fact I do that like it's it. Harder to get the beer makes it more special.
To some people, yeah. I mean, there are some beers you can only buy one day a year, you know? It's a Dark Lord by... Three Floyds. I've never had it. They sell it exactly one day a year. I've had some rare beers. I've had Sam Adams Utopias. I've had West D12, Bliss Fluttering 12. What a few years ago was the best beer in the world. I've had some like obscure, random weird. A bunch of the different Goose Islands,
mm-hmm.
Bourbon County versions. I've had Founders Kentucky Breakfast. I've had tons of the really obscure rare beers. It's all about the fact that you're having something special that makes it taste better. If you just tasted it, you'd be like, oh, this is a good beer. But if somebody says, here, you're going to try this beer, you can only buy this on the first Thursday on a prime numbered day in October in Belgium.
Or if you have to personally go through something that's a pain in the ass to get the beer, that makes it taste better.
Well, because that's achieving your personal legend. You know, you're listening to your liver and following through where the beers are. That was the wind.
Your stomach agrees.
I'm not sure which part of me made that noise. It wasn't a fart, but something happened there. The rarity is a big selling point for beer nerds, you know? It's like, oh, this beer you'll never try anywhere else. When you put that in someone's head, you think differently.
How many reviews were there for that beer?
14,000+.
So 14,000 people living in and around Vermont. Or not necessarily. Maybe they traveled a long way, and then that made them rate it specifically highly.
I tell you, I actually watched videos of people blind taste testing it, and they seem to consistently rate it high. Now, did they give it a perfect score always? No. But they don't. I've never seen them give it a low score. And I've seen them give low scores to some of the other beers I named that are the obscure, the exclusive ones, like Dark Lord in particular. We don't need to say their name, but they have given, there's videos on YouTube of people blind taste testing Dark Lord, same group of guys, blind taste testing Heady Topper. They give Heady Topper high scores. They give like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 kind of score. They shit all over Dark Lord. Dark Lord's $50 a bottle, and you can buy it one day a year. Heady Topper, it's $12.50 a four-pack. You just gotta drive to get it. I mean, is it the best IPA I've ever had? That's like, I think a fucking, that's like a stupid question. I don't really care. You know? What does that accomplish? But I will say it's a great beer. Now, which of these, I mean, you seem to be hesitant to say which of these five is your preferred.
I am, yeah.
I think Heady Topper, I've personally done it where I was, like, blindfolded, and I chose Heady Topper. Maybe that was my heart speaking in the universal language of sheep and bullshit. But I liked it. I say I like the Heady Topper. I like Focal. I like Alina. Skadoosh is my least favorite. It just doesn't have the impact the other ones do. Not to say it's bad. It's just my least favorite of the five. And Crusher, it's 9%. The other ones are 7 or 8. How do you have an 8% IPA and then you're going to tell me 9% is the double IPA? I could do math. That doesn't add up. Overall, though, I really enjoy them all. Much more than I enjoyed The Alchemist, the book.
Right, yeah. Definitely me too.
And can we talk about the ending of that fucking shit book?
Yes, definitely.
So, spoiler, this book blows. But, further spoiler, Santiago follows his quest, gets to the pyramids, and his heart tells him where he cries, he'll find his treasure. And he gets over a hill, sees the pyramids, and starts to weep, and he's like, this is where my treasure is. And he starts to dig with his hands in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
And after hours, some other fucking guys come by, and they go, oh, we're, you know, refugees from the tribal war that's been happening. Give us your shit, or we'll kill you. And he's like, I don't have anything. And they beat the ever-loving shit out of him, take whatever he has. They take whatever he has. He's swollen shut from the beating they've given him. And they say, you have more money. Tell us, give us what you have. And he says, no, I'm digging here for my treasure. And they say, oh, this guy's crazy. Leave him alone. Fuck this guy. He's a lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the bandits turns to him. Do you remember what he says? Oh, you're digging for your treasure? He says, yes, I had a dream. I would come here and I'd find my treasure here. And I guess that's stupid. I was in this exact same spot 2 years ago. And I had a dream that I'd find my fucking treasure under a tree in Spain where I'd be a fucking shepherd.
Under a tree growing inside a church, which is the exact place that Santiago used to live in.
Yeah.
So it's so obviously clear that that what Santiago was actually looking for was not in the by the pyramids in Egypt. It was actually back home where he originally...
And they say, yeah, dreams are stupid, kid. And they leave. And Santiago, who is beaten within an inch of his life, a moment ago, he's considering that his death is near, smiles, and he's like, oh, now I know where my treasure is.
Back home where I started.
Exactly where I started years ago. Didn't have to go through this bullshit. And he goes back, and he finds the treasure, and there's a fucking cartoonish treasure chest filled with coins and jewels and all sorts of other bullshit. And only then does he realize that he had the girl he wanted to marry. He's like, oh, I'll be coming for you too, don't worry. Even though he had totally had to pass by her to get back home. That's just inconsiderate. That was fucking aggravating.
The fact that after all of the stuff in the book about follow your dreams, you know, follow when he literally has a dream about going to the pyramids and that's where your treasure lies. And then the treasure is not actually a real treasure. It tells him, go back to where you absolutely started. So is the message, don't follow your dreams? Is the message, just stay at home because what you already have is really what you want? And you don't need to go through all that hassle of all this other stuff? You don't need to go through a year's journey of discovering blah, blah, blah about the universe and the universal language because what you really wanted, though you don't know it, was actually back at home. Were you already? That's the message of the book?
I don't think so.
So don't follow your dreams. Isn't that what that means?
Well, no, because look at the fucking crystal guy. He didn't follow his dreams.
And he ended up in the exact same place he started, just like Santiago.
But he didn't know it's where he wanted to be.
Okay, yeah, that's true. He didn't have the experience of dealing with all these other situations to know for sure he was actually happy where he was.
It's bullshit. It's really fucking stupid to just say that. Imagine saying that to somebody. Like, you're following your dream and your personal legend, but it's wrong. The thing you're doing is not the right decision. That is so insulting for Santiago and Paulo Coelho to say to the crystal merchant who is responsible, right? And he's like, oh, I have a job. I make a living. I don't need to go anywhere else. This is what I know. And then, oh, he'll never know his personal legend. He never followed it. Well, no, because that motherfucker paid his bills. That guy was responsible. How ridiculous is this? I find it remarkably aggravating to think about the ending of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Almost as aggravating as the rest of the book. The idea that follow your personal legend, listen to your heart, and you will find your way in the world. That is stupid. That's not how it works. The world doesn't conspire to help you, nor does the world conspire against you. The world, or the universe, doesn't care if you are. It's like, oh, you're some infinitesimally small thing. Go about it. But at the end of the book, we realize that when they say, quote-unquote, universe, they don't mean universe.
No.
They mean something very different. They mean the Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's a passage I had to read twice to be sure. Like the last, I don't know, handful of pages of the book, there's a story. I don't even remember who's telling it now.
So it's the alchemist. So Santiago meets the actual alchemist, and he does a bunch of things, and then literally this is within just a couple pages of the end, after many different things that happen, and Alchemist just goes, wait, let me tell you a story. And the story happens to be about Jesus. They never say his name, they just say, well, a man went to heaven and asked God, you know, let me see the achievements of my sons, you know, the poetry, whoever's been most remembered. And it was the son who was a centurion, who was a Roman centurion. And the Roman centurion heard about this rabbi that could heal the sick and then wrote a bunch of stuff about him.
Well, what they said, period. He went to a thing and they said, oh, are these my son's poems? Oh, no, your son was a centurion and he did this.
Your other son was a centurion. And so literally, like the point, like the first 99% of the book is about how, well, you just have to listen to your heart to hear the universal language. And then at the very end, with no real reason, the alchemist just says, let me tell you a story about Jesus, and connects it to Jesus. Yeah. But not really, just says, let me tell you a story about Jesus. And then he disappears.
And then Santiago digs up a chest of jewels, and then decides to go back and get that other girl from the Oasis.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't understand sequence of events.
You know, it doesn't even make sense with the rest of the book.
The Christian imagery, I have no problem with Christian imagery. But when it's just money shotted into your face at the end of the book, it just didn't feel right.
No.
It felt forced, like a prison love encounter. It was just thrust into you, and you're like, oh, no, this is what's happening. It's Jesus. And then you, fuck. And that's the end of it.
And then there's literally a page and a half left in the book.
Yeah.
And it's sent, oh, wait, I was supposed to go all the way back to Spain? That's what I wanted? It was all the way back at home? And then the book ends.
Pretty well, then he goes back to Spain.
Yeah.
Digs it up. Oh, I have all my jewels now. And then he gets a whiff on the wind of the girl he loves in the Oasis, his queef. And he goes, oh, I'm coming, Fatima. And that's how it ends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hey, I can't fault him there. The guy's been, like, following sheep and old men around. If he's got to go get some, I'm not going to judge the guy. However, he should have thought about this better. That was just
stupid.
It's just aggravating. So why the fuck is this book popular? This is one of the greatest selling books of all time.
Yeah. Like, 65 million copies.
This is the kind of book that people who don't read books have read. You know, you'll see pictures of celebrities, not just like, you know, fucking actor celebrities, but, you know, statesmen and authors and intellectuals. They'll have this book in their hand. It's a book high school students read, and middle school students, and college students. Why the fuck do they read this book? What did we miss? I think the idea of, hey, go follow your dreams, that's a common thing in
that's
the world.
That's great. That's fine. Have a goal. Work towards achieving your goal. That makes sense.
But that's not the message of the book.
No.
The book is not like, hey, figure out what you want to do and then work at it. The message of the book is, listen to the earth and it will tell you what you want to do, and then you will follow it. That's fucking terrible.
And something else in the world, in the universe, will make it happen for you? So you have no agency over your own personal legend?
It's a very impersonal personal legend.
Yeah.
Is this going to happen to you if you choose to let it, or it just doesn't happen? I just found it frustrating and insulting.
Mm-hmm.
This is much but bullshit.
Thankfully, short.
This was a two dump book.
Yeah.
I read it on one train ride. And a dump. I started it. Like, I gotta finish this. We're doing this podcast soon. Thankfully, I didn't have enough vegetables and I had some time. And I read through it. And this is the second time I've read this book.
Me too.
You know, the first time I read it, I liked it. Just because I read the book, I was like, oh, that's an interesting story. Now that I thought about it more carefully, it was awful.
Yeah.
For a book that sold 65 million copies, you'd think it would say something. I got nothing out of it. Follow your dreams, because I can't even. Fuck this book.
So, tell us what you thought. Send us an email at drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com or
follow us on Twitter at drunkguysbc as in book club.
And listen to us next week when we read
A Clockwork Orange by Anthony Burgess.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Bye.